facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome. So glad you joined us on this terrific Tuesday. Want to get in on the conversation? Give me a call. 1-888-914-9149. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. You can also try tweeting at me, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E is my Twitter handle. You can follow me. You can tweet your question or your comment at me, and we'll try to get it on the show. You can also follow the show account, too, at Cale Clark Show. You can email us, cale@relevantradio.com. So many ways to get a hold of us. And producer Lucas Holt, I don't know how we're going to top yesterday's show. Yesterday, Father Rocky, the CEO of Relevant Radio, was on the show, and we spent the hour talking about his wonderful new book, which is so readable and so good, and I hope that everybody downloads it for free. It's called Voting Your Conscience, and how important that is in these times. And you can get that at relevantradio.com/vote. It's free for the asking, and it's a really, really good resource. And so it's interesting because Father Rocky talked a lot about St. Jose Maria yesterday, the founder of Opus Dei, and today is the anniversary of his canonization. He was canonized on this day, October the 6th, 2002. And actually, my wife was there. She was in Rome for the canonization of St. Jose Maria along with her family. And lots of good things to talk about with respect to him, because he was really, as Pope John Paul II called him, the saint of the ordinary. I want to get into his life in just a little bit. And also, I don't know if you guys have heard, on October the 10th, this weekend, a beatification is going to happen. And talk about canonizations, talk about beatifications. This one is for Carlo Acutis, who was a teenager who died in 2006 when he was only 15 years old. And you might have seen this because there's been a ton of stories about him on the internet. And I posted to Twitter a picture of his tomb, which has been opened. And his tomb is in Assisi in Italy. And of course, just a couple of days ago, we had the Feast of St. Francis of Assisi on the 4th. But his tomb was opened just a few days ago in preparation for his beatification. And a lot of people were asking the question, is Carlo Acutis incorrupt? Does he have an incorrupt body? When you look at the picture, it looks as if he is incorrupt. I mean, you can see his face. He's got his hair. He is actually lying there in his tomb wearing a sweatshirt, blue jeans, and Nike sneakers. And that's sort of the way he used to dress. You know, he was into computer programming. He used the internet to evangelize. Really interesting stuff. And I guess he just simply wanted to be buried the way that he lived. And it's very striking in its normalcy, I guess you could say. And we're not suggesting that, Nike is the official sponsor of canonized saints or beatified soon-to-be saints. You know, be a saint. Just do it. But he is buried in his Nike sneakers. And I think it's a little bit inspiring, maybe a lot inspiring for young people to see that example, because here's a guy who looks just like they do. I mean, he looks like any other young person walking down the street today, or maybe on a university campus or at a high school. And people need to see those examples and say, wow, if he can be holy, if God can get a hold of his life and make him a saint, maybe he can do the same with me. And so let's just get into the whole question of whether or not he is incorrupt. You might remember the famous book that was written by the late Joan Carol Cruz back in 1977. It's gotten a lot of play over the years. It was called The Incorruptibles. Do you remember that book? Have you read that book? And she really wanted to do this big investigation as much as she could at the time before the age of the internet. Really hard to track down some of this information about which saints are incorruptible. Their bodies did not decay after they died. Which are incorruptible, which ones people maybe thought were incorruptible but actually weren't when more investigation was undertaken. She wrote really the best piece that she could at the time. And she found out that a lot of these saints that people had thought were incorrupt actually were not, because they had been embalmed prior to their death. So for incorruptibility to take place, there can't be any embalming human process to preserve the body. And not that you need to be incorrupt to become a canonized saint. It certainly helped in the old days. Apparently, St. John of the Cross was very incorrupt when he was unearthed, if you will. And even to this day, as I'm trying to read as much as I can about this, but all the articles that I've read about it, it still seems kind of nebulous as to what makes a person incorrupt. You know, they have to, their skin has to be very, very supple, all that sort of stuff. Well, how supple does it have to be? Like, as long as it's still on the body, I mean, that seems pretty good to me. I mean, we do know that under normal circumstances, the flesh will decompose. Now, maybe the conditions of the tomb take that into account, but as I've talked about many times on the show, this is how the Jews buried their dead at the time of Jesus. They would put them in a tomb, put them in a sort of niche in a rock-cut tomb in many cases, and they'd come back a year after the death, on the death anniversary, gather up the bones, by then the flesh is decomposed, and put those bones into what's called an ossuary, or a bone box. And speaking of bone boxes, later in the show I want to talk about James, one of the more famous ossuaries that was found, may in fact belong to James, the Bishop of Jerusalem, who is the so-called, quote-unquote, brother of the Lord. Now, maybe you went to Mass this morning or sometime this afternoon, maybe at lunchtime, and you heard the first reading, and St. Paul talks about visiting James, the brother of the Lord, and you're thinking, hang on here, Mary didn't have any other children, so who is this brother of the Lord? Well, I'll explain that later on. But anyways, suffice it to say, it's pretty stupendous that somebody's body can still be intact after spending so many years, in this case 14 years in the case of Carlo Acutis, in the tomb. And that's exactly what the Archbishop of the region said, that he is not necessarily incorrupt, but his body is intact. All the internal organs are there. And when they did put his body on display, they did have to do a little bit of reconstruction on his face with silicone, and but he looks incredibly, very much like he is in fact alive and just sleeping. So take a look at that tweet that I posted. Take a look at the picture of him lying in state in his tomb, or just Google for it, Carlo Acutis, and his name is spelled A-C-U-T-I-S, first name Carlo. How do I spell Carlo? I don't know, man. I'm losing it. C-A-R-L-O is how you spell his first name. So Carlo Acutis, and he will be beatified coming up in just a couple of days on October the 10th. Pope Francis wrote about him in a book called Christ Lives, in a document called Christ Lives, and he said he's a really, really important example for young people because Carlo Acutis used the internet to evangelize. He set up websites on, he was kind of a, you know, an internet geek, I guess, if you will. Like he was a gamer. You know, so many kids are into that today. He built websites. So he built a website about Eucharistic miracles. That's one of the things he was known for. And also one dedicated to the Virgin Mary. So Pope Francis actually said, quote, "He is a boy of our time, a boy of the internet age, a model of holiness of the digital age. The computer has become a way of going through the streets of the world, like the first disciples of Jesus, to bring to hearts and homes the announcement of true peace, that which quenches the thirst for the infinite that inhabits the human heart." End of quote. So that's really a great quote, because really the pathways of the net can be, in fact, the streets that we have to walk in order to bring the gospel to other people, especially during these COVID times when most of us aren't encountering a whole lot of people in social settings. And here I live in Toronto, the cases are ticking up and up and up every day. We're definitely into a second wave, I think, and who knows what's going to happen in the future. So reaching out online, reaching out really in any way we can to others is something we have to think about. We have to be creative about it. And Carlo Acutis certainly did. Venerable Carlo Acutis, who will be blessed, Carlo Acutis, in just a few days. And I remember just going on a trip, and I mentioned this before, when my wife and I went on our honeymoon, we went to Italy, and we toured around some ancient churches, and we did see some bodies of saints, which may or may not be incorrupt. Again, the definition of you know, who exactly is incorrupt is a little bit dicey, and, you know, I don't know. I think some of these saints, their bodies, if they don't meet the technical definition of being incorrupt, they're pretty darn good. I mean, 80%, you know, I still think this is pretty miraculous to me. So I would take pictures of some of these saints, and I saw the tomb of St. Vincent de Paul. I don't know if he's technically incorrupt. Maybe one of you can reach out and let me know. Call the show 1-888-914-9149. I don't think that he is, but he's remarkably well preserved. And I would take pictures of these incorrupt bodies and show them to my friends, especially my non-Catholic friends when I got home. And I remember my friend Brad and his wife Julie coming over for dinner one night, and Trish and I were sharing about our trip and showing photos, and that's what really got his attention. You know, hold on here. This guy died what year? You know, 17th century, 18th century. You know, what is going on here? You know, why is he not disintegrated? Why isn't it just a skeleton? And that really kind of got him thinking. So the supernatural is still on the loose in today's world. And we see that with these incorrupt or near incorrupt saints. So anyways, very interesting stuff. Look him up, Carlo Acutis. And speaking of the pathways of the world and sharing the gospel, and maybe it's through the pathways of the net, through the pathways of technology, as Pope Francis suggested in the case of Carlo Acutis, we've got to do that too. We've got to get into the streets and share the gospel. And that's one thing that St. Jose Maria Escrivá was all about getting into the reality of Christ in ordinary life. And here's one of the things that he said, St. Jose Maria. He said, everyday life is the true setting for your lives as Christians. Your ordinary contact with God takes place where your fellow men, your yearnings, your work, and your affections are. There you have your daily encounter with Christ. It is in the midst of the most material things of the earth that we must sanctify ourselves, serving God and all mankind. God is calling you to serve Him in and from the ordinary, material, and secular activities of human life. One of the things that he said in another context was that, you know, if we don't find Christ in the midst of ordinary everyday life, we're never going to find Him at all. Because sometimes we can build a fantasy life in our minds thinking that, well, I would pray more, you know, if I didn't have all these distractions in my life, if I wasn't married, for example, if I didn't have this job, I would have more time. You know, maybe people who are married and have a family see those things as obstacles to their union with Christ. Oh man, if only I could be like the desert monks and just live an uninterrupted life of silence and prayer. Well, God certainly calls some people to that life. There's no question about that. But you're missing the point. If God has called you to marriage and family life and to a certain vocation in the world, has given you certain gifts and abilities, and you're trying to use those in the workplace to try to serve humanity, that's where you're going to find Christ. These are not obstacles to your finding Christ. This is, in fact, what's going to enable you to find Christ. That's how it's going to work. And I remember an American priest who was at the canonization of St. Jose Maria as well, and he was at St. Peter's Square, and there were just thousands upon thousands, hundreds of thousands of people there, as far as the eye could see. He kept thinking to himself, man, I had a slice of pizza with this guy. Like, I ate pizza with this guy, and now he's a canonized saint. So again, you know, it is possible. It is possible for any of us to be canonizable saints. Now, not all of us will have a ceremony like that, but we can all become canonizable saints. That's what we should be shooting for. And so what's interesting also about St. Jose Maria and technology was that he's actually one of the most viewable canonized saints out there, because if you go on the internet, there are a lot of videos. If you go, for example, the Opus Dei website or go on YouTube, there's a St. Jose Maria channel. You can see him in action. You can see how charismatic he was. And one can only imagine how much more so he was when he was younger, because most of these videos were made just prior to his heavenly birthday, if you will, just prior to his death on June 26, 1975. So he was a little bit sick at that time. Very often he was run down on energy. Travel was hard on him, but he was traveling the world and he wanted to meet as many people as possible. And Blessed Alvaro del Portillo, who was, of course, his right-hand man, who's also on track to be canonized, he convinced St. Jose Maria to have himself filmed. And he was like, no, I really don't want to do this. It's not me. I don't want to be filmed. I'm going to be self-conscious. This is, no, I don't want to be recorded. And Blessed Alvaro, who was known as Don Alvaro, told him, look, Father, if you don't let us do this, you know, future generations are going to think basically that we were idiots for not filming you because we had the technology and we didn't do it. And we, like, even during his life, people thought that St. Jose Maria was a living saint. And so he finally said, okay, I'll agree to it. So he allowed himself to be filmed. So because of that, we have a lot of video clips about him and his teaching available online, a lot of get-togethers that he had with people. And a lot of people have received tremendous favors through his intercession. I encourage you all to ask for his intercession about problems relating to especially your work and your family life, because he really, that was the main core of his message, how we can sanctify ourselves in our work and through our work, and through our work also sanctify other people. Now, he was born in 1902 in Barbastro, Spain, and had a great loving home, and he really actually wanted to become a married person himself, raise a family. He had no interest at all in becoming a priest. Actually, he was going to be an architect. But when he was 16 years old, a very, very simple, very ordinary event happened in his life that caused him to just radically change his thinking and just become completely at God's disposal. Whatever you want, Lord. When he was 16 years old, it was a very cold and snowy day, and he looked out his window, and he saw in the snow the footprints, the barefoot footprints of a Carmelite monk. And this guy, I don't know, I guess it was some sort of a penance he was doing. He was walking in the snow barefoot. He was a barefoot Carmelite, a discalced Carmelite, if you will, and that even extended to outdoors. And as he saw these footprints in the snow, it caused him to think, you know, wow, if this guy's willing to do this for God, if this guy's willing to go through this discomfort for God and offer this to God, and even though nobody can see him, I mean, he doesn't know that I've seen his footprints, but God knows. If he's willing to do this for God, what does he want me to do for him? What are you calling me to, Lord? And so he kept asking that question, and he kept repeating the words of the blind man in the gospel, Lord, let me see. Domine ut vidium. And he kept praying, and he knew that God at that moment was calling him to something, but he just didn't know what it was. So for years and years, he prayed that prayer. And in 1928, on October the 2nd, God answered his prayer on the Feast of the Guardian Angels in a very, very powerful way. And I'm going to talk to you about that after this break. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Give us a call, 1-888-914-9149. Be right back.
Facts and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
That is, of course, the great Eddie Van Halen on guitar, playing for his band Van Halen, which also, of course, included his brother on drums, Alex Van Halen, Michael Anthony, and, of course, David Lee Roth, the original lineup of Van Halen, Dance the Night Away. And sad news coming down today that Eddie Van Halen, it was announced this afternoon, has passed away from cancer at the age of 65. So please pray for the repose of his soul and for his family members left behind. One of the greatest rock musicians of the modern era, for sure. As if 2020 didn't have enough bad news. Oh man, the hits just keep on coming. And Van Halen certainly had a lot of hits, that is for sure. So rest in peace, Eddie. By the way, speaking of prayer, I want to invite you to join with Catholics across the country tomorrow, October the 7th, which is the Feast of Our Lady of the Rosary. And of course, October is the month of the Rosary. At 2 p.m. Central tomorrow, we are going to pray a Rosary for America. And this is going to be a moment of unified prayer for the country. And it's been called for by the United States bishops. At this time, when obviously there's so much unrest and uncertainty in our country, and Archbishop Jose Gomez of Los Angeles, who is the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, along with a lot of other bishops and priests and Catholics across the country, we're going to be praying together tomorrow at 2 p.m. a virtual rosary. So we hope that you can tune in and pray with us as we seek healing and unity for our country and ask Our Lady on her feast to pray for us and to help lead us to her son, Jesus. Because she says, of course, in John's Gospel, do whatever he tells you in John chapter 2. So you can be part of this Rosary for America tomorrow, again, at 2 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio. So just listen to your local station, or you can watch online at relevantradio.com or through the Relevant Radio app. So you'll be able to watch this, not just hear it. There's going to be some video involved as well. So St. Jose Maria Escrivá, of course, had a great devotion to Our Lady and to the Rosary. And just before the break, I was going through a little bit of his life story. Today's the anniversary of his canonization in 2002. And as St. John Paul II said when he canonized him, he is really the saint of the ordinary. And he, as a young man, when he saw those footprints in the snow, he kept asking, you know, God, what do you want from me? And so he kept praying this for years and really didn't get much of an answer, but he really persisted in that prayer. And he prayed, you know, Lord, let me see. And he also asked Our Lady to help too. He said, you know, I don't know what God has in mind for me, but Our Lady, let it be. So Lord, let me see, and Lady, let it be. You know, it's like the Beatles, let it be, let it be. Okay, I won't get into any karaoke kale stuff tonight, but his prayers were finally answered. He decided to become a priest after all, even though that's not necessarily what he was thinking vocationally. He wanted to get married, wanted to become an architect, but he thought, you know, his reasoning was, I'm just going to try to be as available as I can for God, and the best way I can figure out how to do that is simply to become a priest and put myself at his disposal there. So that's what he was thinking, and in 1928, he was a young priest, he was only 26 years old, he was on a retreat, making a retreat, and he heard the bells from a local church, and it was the Feast of the Guardian Angels, October the 2nd, 1928, and he had a mystical experience that day, in which he said that he, quote-unquote, he saw Opus Dei, he saw the whole thing develop throughout the ages, and we don't know exactly what he saw. Maybe some people do. Maybe Don Alvaro, he confided in perhaps about it, but he didn't really talk about this publicly, what he saw or what he experienced, because really that's not what he was about. He wasn't about, you know, looking for these wonderful supernatural experiences, these kind of out-of-this-world, out-of-the-ordinary type of ways that God can sometimes speak to us. Now, if they come, great, fantastic. If God speaks to us in a kind of a locution, or you know, he gives us a vision, a supernatural occurrence happens, you know, wonderful, if that's what he wants. But really, St. Jose Maria was about finding God again in the ordinary events of everyday life, in the so-called mundane. I said this, everyday life is the true setting for your lives as Christians. Your ordinary contact with God takes place where your fellow men, your yearnings, your work, and your affections are. There you have your daily encounter with Christ. It is in the midst of the most material things of the earth that we must sanctify ourselves, serving God and all mankind. God is calling you to serve him in and from the ordinary, material, and secular activities of human life. He waits for us every day in the laboratory, in the operating theater, in the army barracks, in the university chair, in the factory, in the workshop, in the fields, in the home, and in all the immense panorama of work. Understand this well. There is something holy, something divine, hidden in the most ordinary situations, and it is up to each one of you to discover it. So what's he saying there? Well, basically, God wants us to become saints right where we are. Now, he might take you out of your situation. He might say, I want you to become a missionary and go overseas. I want you to learn a new language and reach a new people group. He might say that to you. But in all likelihood, what he really wants is for you to stay exactly where you are, but just change your perspective and understand that becoming a saint isn't for other people. It's for you. God is calling you to be a saint. You know, I always think of that scene at the end of the Gospel of John when the resurrected Christ is, you know, walking down the beach with Peter. He's telling Peter how he's going to become a martyr and glorify God. And John is kind of trailing behind on the beach. You know, he's walking a few steps behind. And Peter's like, yeah, well, what about that guy, Lord? What, you know, what's his fate going to be? Well, Jesus says, don't worry about him, man. This is the Cale Clark paraphrased version, of course. Don't worry about that guy. Worry about you. Worry about what I'm trying to do in your life. That's what you have to focus on. And so we're not going to be called in all likelihood to leave our state in life or go somewhere else or even do something else vocationally. It's going to involve doing the exact same things that we're doing now, but with a different perspective, finding God in the middle of it, offering it all to God, and using those things to help us get to God, to become holy, to become saints, finding God through serving our spouses, our children, or, you know, for being a good worker. That's what Jesus was doing for the first 30 years of his life. You know, yesterday we were talking about, on the Faith Explained show, why Jesus didn't start his public ministry until he was 30 years old. Well, this is the age that a Jewish rabbi would begin teaching, so it's very appropriate culturally, but what was he doing up until that time for the first 30 years of his life? Well, he was still sanctifying the world, just doing it in a different way. He was sanctifying ordinary life, his work, his family life with Mary and Joseph, his community life in the synagogue, his friendships. Friendships are so important. Later this week, we're going to talk about finding friendship, and people need that. We crave that. And this is one of the privileged means that God uses to help us become holy, spiritual friendship, having a mentor, having a friend who can, you know, pull us up to God, you know, like grabbing onto a, you know, a balloon and, you know, just rising up. That's what we've got to do. So we're not to leave our situation, but rather to flip around our imagination, if you will. And so these ordinary, so-called ordinary situations of life can become quite extraordinary, and we can find Christ in them. And really, St. Jose Maria said, I'm not really inventing anything new here. He said, my message is as old as the gospel. And like the gospel, it's also forever new. It's also new and exciting because, really, this is what the early Christians did. You know, how did the gospel spread in the early centuries of the church? The church was not legal. You couldn't have, you know, open-air masses with the Pope at the Roman Colosseum. You know, most of the popes became martyrs, and, you know, the average faithful person never met the Pope back in those days. The church was underground in the catacombs. You could be arrested simply for getting caught at a Eucharistic celebration. Sometimes spies were placed in by the government. And so how did one grow in the faith and learn about their faith? Well, it's basically through meeting somebody who was a Catholic, who shared their faith with you and sort of mentored you and introduced you to the church. And in time, if you accepted the message, you were able to eventually be baptized and then enter into the sacraments, receive the Eucharist. And so one-on-one relationships and friendships, really, really important. Yes, we can do mass evangelism, and we should. That's why I'm thankful for Relevant Radio. We can reach so many people, millions and millions of people through the internet, through radio, through media. But, you know, when people are baptized, you know, we don't do mass baptisms of people. You know, we don't fill a parish, and especially in these COVID times, and then, you know, have the priest, you know, sprinkle holy water on everybody as he goes by. I baptize you all, you know, in the name of the Father and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. No. Baptisms are done individually. And really sharing the faith has to be done like that too. Just like somebody might share the coronavirus, you know, you're usually picking it up from somebody else next to you. Well, let's think about making the faith go viral here and share with those around us. It's where we got to start. Almost like a bullseye, like these concentric circles. Start with the people around you. The people that God has placed in your path, you know, in your family, on your street, people that you're talking to, friends, even online friends, are really, really a great people to think about because they need Christ, and God is calling them to be saints as well. And it's really, really important for us to remember that at all times. And you know, there's a lot of bad news out there, and so we've got to be good news people. One of the best things that we can do is keep our sense of joy. And that's, again, St. Jose Maria was really, really strong on this. He would say, you know, cheerfulness is an essential part of your way. It's an essential part of your way. You know, long faces, you know, looking sad, that's not going to inspire other people. That's not going to attract them to Christ. So cheerfulness and joy, and sometimes even when, humanly speaking, things are falling apart, that really makes a huge impression on people. In fact, there was an article, I don't know if you saw this, in The Economist magazine that just came out a couple days ago about why we need to laugh at work. And, you know, one of the things that's happening to us as we're all at home and we're all meeting with people and colleagues through Zoom is that we don't have that kind of workplace camaraderie in many cases that we used to have. And if you watch TV shows like The Office, and the article talks about this, you know, whether it's the British version with Ricky Gervais or with Steve Carell, the American version of The Office, you know, there's that cringe-worthy humor from the boss, and we don't have that at Relevant Radio because all Father Rocky's jokes are genuinely funny. We're not just giving him a courtesy laugh. They're really, really good. He's a very funny guy. But sometimes when the boss makes a joke, there's that sort of awkward, oh, I guess I better laugh, you know, because if I don't, you know, I'm going to get a bad performance review. But, you know, the article says really the best kind of humor comes from below. You know, it comes from, you know, people who just attract people with their humor and just everyday things that happen. And it really can put everybody in a great mood, that we're all pulling together, that we're all fighting together. And we're kind of missing out on that in a lot of ways. So it's really, really important to take time, I think, to laugh. And actually, just before the show, as I was having a quick dinner with my family, Michaela, my daughter, who, of course, you know, she always comes in at the end of the show, she's been really honing her stand-up routine. So I want to share a couple jokes that she gave us tonight.
Have you heard a joke about the roof?
No, Michaela, I haven't.
It's just over your heads.
Okay. So, yeah, have you heard the one about the roof? It's over your head. That was pretty good. She's been working on that. And she had another one as well.
Hi, I'm Michaela. I'm going to do the centipede and the parrot. What do you get when you cross a centipede and a parrot? A walkie-talkie. Bye.
Okay. What do you get when you cross a centipede? Yeah, good job. What do you get when you cross a centipede and a parrot? A walkie-talkie. I love it. Good stuff, Michaela. Watch out. She may have her own half-hour special on Relevant Radio. And I don't know, if you know any good kid jokes, give us a call. 1-888-914-9149. Or any good work jokes. Any good funny work jokes. We do need a laugh from time to time here on Relevant Radio and wherever we may be. Going to go to the phones right now. Janet is on the line, calling from somewhere in Illinois, listening to the show. Janet, welcome to the show. And you want to say something about St. Vincent de Paul and whether or not he's incorrupt, right?
Yeah. I found in the Incorruptibles, my book is falling apart, but it's a very good book. I don't want to lose sight of it. And it's written by Joan Carol Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a little perplexing in a way to find out that he was incorrupt, because he was incorrupt for 52 years. And then after that, he was partly not incorrupt because there was some damage done to the tomb by a flood.
Oh, really?
It says here, during the celebration for his canonization, the body was again exhumed, because it had been exhumed once before that in 1712, 52 years after his death, and it was found incorrupt on. But then for his canonization, let's see, that would have been several years later. I thought I read that somewhere, what year it was.
Mm-hmm.
1660, yeah. 1712 to 1617.
So,
how could that be?
So, Janet, the bottom line is that he was incorrupt, and then later on he wasn't incorrupt, but he's still kind of incorrupt, I guess you could say. Because I've seen his body in Paris, and I actually just wandered into this church, you know, with my wife and a few other people. We were kind of on a layover, really, really fast layover in Paris, and we were just kind of walking around, saw the Eiffel Tower. Wandered into this church, and there he was, and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe our good fortune in finding St. Vincent de Paul there. So that's interesting, too. So you've got a very well-worn copy of The Incorruptibles by Joan Carol Cruz. So that's good. So appreciate that call, Janet. Really, thank you for calling in. That's good information. And we've kind of got a lot of messages coming in, and I guess split about 50-50, you know, is he incorrupt, is he not? Maybe we should take a Twitter poll on this, you know, not that would matter, you know, who wins the poll as to whether he is or he isn't. But anyways, there you have it. But it does surprise a lot of people to know that. Incorruptibility is not a factor at all in the canonization process at this point. So when it comes to Venerable Carlo Acutis, who will be beatified this weekend, really is not a factor whether he's incorruptible or not, but he did live a very, very holy life in the midst of the ordinary world, and that's what we've all got to do for the most part. Dominic is also on the line. He is calling from Grants, New Mexico. Welcome to the program, Dominic. How are you?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, just kind of following up and maybe taking a few steps back on some of those kid jokes. So I wanted to share a two-parter with you that I heard from.
All right, let's hear it.
Okay, so what do you call a cow with no legs?
A cow with no legs. I have no idea, Dominic.
Ground beef.
Oh, nice. Nicely done. Nicely done. I appreciate that.
What do you call a cow? Yeah, what do you call a cow with two legs?
I don't know.
Lean beef.
Lean beef. Dominic, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. You know, listeners to the show, we had a show actually a few weeks ago. Actually, it's quite a while ago now, where we asked you what your best Catholic joke was, and the phone lines were jammed for the entire program. I think we all could use a laugh. And why not? Let's open it up. More jokes. Call us 1-888-914-9149. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And listen, speaking of humor and how important it is, you know, even in the face of very, very serious issues, we talked about the death of Eddie Van Halen from cancer today. Obviously, there have been a lot of people very, very ill and who have died. Perhaps you know someone personally. You've been touched by this in your own life. Someone who has had COVID and passed away. So many things going on. So much bad news in the news cycle. There's a lot of good news as well. And we can find God and we can find joy in the midst of it. Do you remember Jimmy V, Coach Jim Valvano, who, of course, had that incredible celebration when his North Carolina State Wolfpack, he's an NCAA basketball coach, when they improbably won, they were a real Cinderella team, won March Madness in 1983, knocking off the University of Houston, Phi Slamajama, Clyde the Glide Drexler, Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon. It was an improbable win. He was just, you know, running and dancing all over the court. Everybody remembers that. But he gave a really, really powerful speech. And just as we go to break, I want to play for you what he said about the importance of joy in the midst of everyday life.
And when people say to me, how do you get through life or each day, it's the same thing. To me, there are three things we all should do every day. If we do this every day of our life, you're going to have, what a wonderful, number one is laugh. You should laugh every day. Number two is think. You should spend some time in thought. And number three is you should have your emotions moved to tears. Could be happiness or joy. But think about it. If you laugh, you think, and you cry, that's a full day. That's a heck of a day. You do that 7 days a week, you're going to have something special. I just got one last thing. I urge all of you, to enjoy your life, the precious moments you have, to spend each day with some laughter and some thought, to get your emotions going, to be enthusiastic every day. And Ralph Waldo Emerson said, nothing great can be accomplished without enthusiasm, to keep your dreams alive in spite of problems, whatever you have, to be able to work hard for your dreams to come true, become a reality. Now I look at where I am now, and I know what I want to do. What I would like to be able to do is to spend whatever time I have left and to give and maybe some hope to others. I know I've got to go. I've got to go, and I've got one last thing. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever. I thank you, and God bless you all.
That was a famous speech that Coach Jimmy V gave at the ESPYs, which are really the Sports Academy Awards, if you will, in 1993, and he passed away from cancer himself soon afterwards. But those words have continued to inspire millions, and hopefully you found them an encouragement tonight as well. We'll be right back after this short break on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. So glad you're with us on this Tuesday, October the 6th, 2020. Give us a call, 1-888-914-9149, it's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And as Julie said, coming back from break, you know, we're about faith, facts, and fun. It's very similar to what Jimmy V said, Coach Jimmy V, in his famous speech at the ESPYs in 93. You know, try to laugh every day. Try to think really deeply about something once a day and have a good cry. And hopefully we've done that for you on the Cale Clark Show on a regular basis, caused you to have a chuckle, a good laugh every once in a while. Think about things a little bit, and hopefully this programming hasn't made you cry, and hopefully it hasn't been too bad. But we did get Lucas, you were just telling me, my producer Lucas Holt was telling me during the commercial break that a message came in on Twitter. Can you read that for me?
Yeah, so we got a message from Francisco listening in Redwood City, California, and he asked Cale, how do you become a person who has the chance of being beatified and or canonized to be a saint?
That is a great question, Francisco. And let me give you the six steps that you need. I wish there were a little manual. You know, if you do these, you know, six things, this is going to happen. Well, really, we have to do one big thing, I think, which is just basically give ourselves to God and just be at his disposal, you know, 24/7, 365. As St. Paul said, you know, I no longer live. It is Christ who lives in me. And we talked about, you know, the old man, the old Paul that used to, when he was Saul, you know, he had a different name even, you know, and he became a new creation in Christ. He talked about that a lot. And that's what happens when we're baptized. The problem is with the old man is still kind of in there somewhere, and he always wants to come out and take over. And so we've got to, again, just renew our self-offering every day, every hour, all the time to Christ. And really, that's what Paul did. And God took Paul, who had done some pretty terrible things, you know, and been involved in the murder of the first Christian martyr, St. Stephen, and made him the world's greatest apostle. So if he could do that for Paul, he can do the same sorts of miraculous things in your life. And he does have a plan for you, Francisco. So thank you for listening, and thank you for writing in that question. And speaking of Paul, one of the things that we read today in the first reading at Mass was this, and this is from the letter to the Galatians. It says that after his conversion, that Paul actually went to Jerusalem, and he met someone who he called the Lord's brother. Let's read this. He said, this is in Galatians chapter 1 from today's Mass reading, I was violently persecuting the church of God and was trying to destroy it. But when God was pleased to reveal his Son to me so that I might proclaim him among the Gentiles, I did not confer with any human being, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were already apostles before me. But I went away at once into Arabia, and afterwards I returned to Damascus. Then after 3 years, I did go up to Jerusalem to visit Cephas and stayed with him 15 days. But I did not see any other apostle except James, the Lord's brother. And that's from Galatians chapter 1. So Paul, you know, when he was converted by Christ, you know, it was a direct appearance of the glorified Christ to him, of course, on his way to Damascus. And then he went into the desert. And really, it was basically just Jesus, you know, kind of, you know, through mystical experiences, through all kinds of desert, you know, experiences with Christ. He was kind of being discipled and learning about Christ, but he wanted to make sure that the gospel he was preaching was the same gospel that everybody else was preaching. And so he went to Jerusalem and he checked it out with Cephas. And that, of course, is Peter. That's his Aramaic name, Cephas. And also James, who is called the Lord's brother. And that does not mean that he is another son of Mary, but he probably was a relative of Jesus, some sort of a kin of Jesus at some level, but not another son of Mary. And he became, of course, the bishop of Jerusalem. And so later on, Paul came back. Now, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall, you know, as Paul is comparing notes with Peter and James, you know, hanging out for 15 days, all the stuff they were talking about. Paul's probably getting filled in on what it was like to hang out with Jesus on earth. Because, of course, when Paul encountered him, he was already ascended into heaven and glorified. So he got caught up on the Galilean ministry of Jesus and what it was like during those days. So this is very, very early stuff, by the way. This happened in the 30s, probably the year 37 AD. And this is probably where Paul got that ancient creed from James and from Peter about Jesus, about the resurrection, all the resurrection appearances that he made. And this is in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. It's an ancient creed that Paul is quoting. He probably got it at that moment. So really interesting stuff. So James is a big-time leader in the early church. We don't talk about him that much because we tend to talk more about, of course, Peter, who was the first pope, and we talk about Paul, who was, of course, the great missionary apostle. James is kind of an afterthought sometimes, but James has a lot to say, and he is probably the author of the letter of James in the New Testament. Very, very practical faith, and you should read that. It's got a lot of good things to say. We'll have to talk about that much more in the future and future programs. So just be assured that he is not the brother of the Lord in terms of being a blood brother. He is not another son of Mary. No, he is probably a relative of Jesus, and that's who he is, James. We're going to go to Michelle right now, who is calling from Flagstaff, Arizona. Michelle, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
Fantastic, fantastic. Thanks for calling.
My mother years and years ago told this joke, and at the time, I barely understood it.
Okay.
And when you were talking about jokes in Catholic, I remembered this little joke that my mother told.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it was about a sexton that cleans the church, and every Monday morning, he was up in the balcony cleaning. And he realized that there was this little woman that would come in every Monday morning, and she was so quiet. She sat in the same place, same time, every Monday. So he thought he would play a joke, and he said, "I'm God." There was no response. So he said it again, "I'm God." There was no response. And then he thought, well, maybe she didn't hear me. So he said it a little louder, "I'm God." And she goes, "Hush up, I'm a-talking to your mama."
Oh. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you for telling us that joke.
You're welcome.
I appreciate the call, and thanks for listening from Flagstaff, Arizona. And by the way, a lot of jokes are coming in now. I take no responsibility for these jokes whatsoever. I blame all of them on my call screener, Patrick Alog. So he is the gatekeeper. So if he thinks it's funny, it's going to get on the air. Just be forewarned. But there you go, Patrick. And you need a sense of humor, too, because your Los Angeles Lakers, they kind of made a mess of things the other night, lost to the Heat. Well, the Heat just won it. They just won it. So I'm sure he's very, very worried about what's going to happen tonight in Game 3. Will the Heat win again and even the series? I'm sure he's anxious. He needs a good joke. So we're going to go to Veronica right now, who is calling from Helena, Montana. Veronica, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Yep.
You've got a joke.
Catholic joke, and so when you called for the Catholic jokes, I had to call in. So this joke takes place in the setting of Jesus when the Pharisees bring the adulterer woman to him, and you know, ask him what he should do. And Jesus looks out into the crowd and he says, "Let those among you without sin throw the first stone." And of course, there's a little bit of a pause, and then out of nowhere, out of the back of the crowd, this rock comes flying up, and it lands a couple of feet away from Jesus, and it rolls to a stop. And he looks up, and he goes, "Mom, I'm trying to make a point here."
Thanks, Veronica. We just got that joke in there under the radar. And speaking of the Mother of our Lord, of course, tomorrow is the Feast of the Holy Rosary. Tune in at 2 p.m. for the Rosary Across America with Archbishop Gomez. Thanks for joining me on the Cale Clark Show. We'll be back tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.